Hare Krishna, Chaitanya Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. It's a great honor and pleasure to have you on the Monks Podcast. Thank you so much for sparing your time today.
It is my great pleasure. I have heard so many wonderful things about this podcast and was able to look into one or two. I think it can become a very good discussion today, and I hope that I will be able to address you and your audience to your full satisfaction.
Thank you, Maharaj. Since the first time I heard your classes, it was almost 16, 17 years ago, I was struck by two things which are, in one sense, difficult to combine. We have a very high level of introspection and devotional intensity. I'm using the word in a positive sense. But at the same time, you were remarkably approachable and friendly the way you view your classes and the way you interact with devotees. So that I found very remarkable, because generally when somebody is more introspective or devotional, it's difficult for, sometimes we may fear that to approach that person, but you make devotees so comfortable by their classes, by presenting your classes. Although you talk about the need for becoming serious in bhakti, but the way you could say you help devotees to comfortably stretch out of their comfort zone. So I'm very grateful for you to join, and I thought based on that, we could discuss a subject accordingly today. So
I don't know how well I'm doing, but all I know is that as someone who wants to share knowledge advances, or let us say becomes older in years, the value of compassion has to come into his life. He should think, what can I do to uplift others so that they will benefit? And I'm trying, I'm imperfect, but I'm trying to follow that lead, so to say.
Oh, thank you very much. So before we start the discussion, you have a very distinctive background. I don't think this is a Zoom created image. It seems, is this a part of your altar, or this is I think Krishna and is it Radharani or Vrindadevi? Could you explain a little bit?
Thank you for your interest. Well, I have heard that the Goswamis, when they were not yet in Vrindavan but lived in Ramakeli, called different places in their environment by Vrindavan names. This is the Govardhan Mountain, this is the Yamuna, this is Radhakund and Syamakund. So similarly, we are trying in our Gorabhavan, where we live, to find reminders of Vrindavan. In the back, there's a picture of Vrindadevi, who ushers the devotees into the spiritual dimension. And right next to her, the Lord of Vrindavan, we call him Gopal Raj, who is engaged in lifting Giriraj for the protection of his devotees. If I could show you around, there are many such photos, pictures, deities, because when we are outside of Vrindavan, we still want to have Udipans or inspirations for the spiritual world.
Oh, yes, Maharaj. It's, so in one sense, Prabhupada's mission was also that. He left Vrindavan, but he carried Vrindavan in his heart, and he, through all his temples, he said, my temples are in Vaikuntha. So he wanted to create the Vrindavan mood.
Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. So, Maharaj, I have read this analysis of the tree of life, which you often present. And the first time you spoke it, and I heard from you in this Radha Gopna temple, it struck me very much at how holistic and balanced it was. So I thought based on that model, we could discuss on the topic of the self-care and chanting in spiritual, in our devotional growth or in our growth in life. So maybe if you want, you could, the tree of life, this is a metaphor that you read somewhere, or you were inspired by, or you read and then you developed it in the contemporary setting. But it's a very striking metaphor.
Yeah, the metaphor wants to express that just like a tree has roots, a trunk, and a crown, a healthy human being must have spiritual roots, a spiritual practice. He must have, as a trunk of his life, the way he stands in the world, physical and emotional well-being, and he must also, like the tree, have a crown from where he contributes his social well-being, where he's useful. The metaphor came really from two sources. I think we all know the Upanishadic analogy of a tree.
Yeah.
That is that refers to the world. This world is a reflected tree, like you said,
yes.
An upside down tree, the upside banyan tree. But in this tree-like world, the human being is a small tree. In the body. The Upanishads, the Bhagavatam says, there is a nest. There are two birds in the tree of life, the individual soul and the super soul. One enjoys the fruits and the other is just watching. So the idea that our human body is like a tree came from this Bhagavatam and Upanishadic example, but it is a creative example. It is something I made up in order to take the wisdom of our scriptures and make it relevant for practical application.
Yes, that tree example is very striking in terms of what you said. There are three aspects. There is the inner, and then the personal and the social, to put it that way, in one sense, the body and mind. So quite often, there is the conception that spiritual life itself will solve all problems. Prabhupada is attributed to have said, especially based on his conversation with his spiritual master, first conversation, that Krishna consciousness itself is the solution to all problems. So when we say that our spiritual foundation refers to one aspect of the tree, our chanting or our devotional practices themselves will take care of the other aspects of the tree? Or is it that we need to broaden our understanding of Krishna consciousness? That Krishna consciousness is not just chanting, but even taking care of a physical and mental, emotional well-being. That is also within the ambit of Krishna consciousness.
Yes, thank you for this necessary question. And how much does a spiritual person have to take care of the body and mind and his relationship to others? As long as we are in the material world, we have to be active in a parallel way. One area in which we act is our spiritual well-being, but then we have a body. We are now with this vehicle, the material body, and we have to also take care of the vehicle so that we reach our ultimate goal, Krishna consciousness. That's why Srila Prabhupada was thinking of introducing, next to the philosophy and the sadhana, also Varnashram in our society. Varnashram is a structure in which each individual member has some physical well-being in terms of his safety, his income, his food, his chapatis. He will find also all the other human needs fulfilled in the Vanashram system. Prabhupada, in order to bring the relevance of Vanashram to our attention, says it is meant to stabilize the shaking position in the world. We are not yet in the spiritual world. We need some support so that we are in this world stabilized and safe and so on. So they need to be done parallel. However, this is very important right at the outset. You need, just like when you go somewhere with a car, you need to take care of the car. But you always, at all times, need to have your goal in mind. Otherwise, your car might take you somewhere where you don't even wish to go. Self-care in itself is not sufficient. You need to combine it with the goal of life so that you take care of your vehicle, of your body and mind in order to reach the spiritual world.
Oh, that's beautiful. And the way you put it, the car body metaphor is standard. We use the standard metaphor to talk about how our essential identity is spiritual. But that same metaphor can be used to emphasize the other point also, that for the soul to function in the world, it needs the vehicle.
Yes.
I am not the car, but if I have to go somewhere, I need a car.
Yeah.
So I need to take care of it from that perspective.
A little while ago, many years ago, not a little while, it was about, I would say, 7 years ago, I was invited to Tehran, and I was sitting in the park where Srila Prabhupada had walked when he visited Iran, and I had before me a manuscript of a conversation, a typed conversation of his, and he made such a beautiful point. He said Krishna consciousness does not mean to neglect the physical body. No, you take care of the physical body so that it can give the fruit of self-realization. Chaitanya Charan Prabhu, without, let us say, the assistance of the body, only self-realized souls can make it. Those who are not yet self-realized, who are in a body, will find that diseases, strong emotional discontent, social isolation will discourage them so much that they will not pursue their spiritual life with enough strength. And they will become slow and discouraged. That I have seen in many cases when here in the West, when those who came to Krishna consciousness gave up the path. They don't have difficulties with the philosophy. No. They are convinced, but they have difficulties with the other people, the devotees, or they feel, oh, I have no safety in my life. I must go to and take care of things and leave the ashram and so on. It's because these areas were not covered to their full satisfaction.
Thank you, Maharaj, for sharing this, especially the incident of Prabhupada talking about taking care of the body. You know, I was, when you mentioned the tree metaphor, I just recollected that twice in the Bhagavatam also, the tree metaphor is used, but in a slightly different sense, where I think in the Bali Maharaj teaching, Bali Maharaj pastime, Vamandev is being told by Shukracharya that don't give charity to Vishnu. But the reason he gives is that even if you want liberation, you need liberation is the fruit of the tree of the body. But if the tree doesn't exist, then you cannot get liberation. And again, the same metaphor comes in the teachings of Vasudeva to Devaki. Rather in that discussion where Kamsa is about to kill Devaki. So Vasudeva also speaks the same metaphor. So, of course, there it is talked, the fruit that is talked about is liberation. And what you talk about is the fruit as social contribution. And we can say that the ultimate social contribution is that we help others become liberated. But the essential point of the tree is that the body is essential. That is, it seems it is there in many places in scripture. And as you said, it is there in Prabhupada's words also. Somehow, is it that in the general presentations that were made to devotees in the first few years of our movement, that the bodily dimension was neglected for some reason? And the idea that the more you can neglect your body, the more you are spiritually advanced. Or the less you sleep, the less you eat, in one sense you neglect the body. So was that a notion that came up because of some circumstantial reasons? Or how do we understand? In scripture, it is clear the body needs to be taken care of. And the common sense also, like through metaphors, we can understand that. But still, it's widely prevalent that if somebody extends themselves a lot and neglects either their body or even their social situation, financial situation, that is often seen as a sign of spiritual seriousness or spiritual advancement. So how did that notion come up, Maharaj?
I think it comes up in there are two perspectives. One is that it is, I think, very natural that at the beginning of one's spiritual path, one emphasizes his spiritual development over every other concern. Those who have joined us, they have done all before the material life, you know, they have tried to earn, they have tried to become educated, they have tried to live a happy life in their families, of where they were eating nicely and had nice relationships, but they have found they cannot become satisfied with these things alone. So therefore, when they hear about Krishna consciousness and the possibility to live an entirely soul-based life where you try to also get a relationship with God, you think, wow, let me drop everything else aside and this is the best thing, and you emphasize it. I think it is natural, and there are sociological studies which do say that in the beginning of every religious movement or spiritual movement, the adherents or followers are only into this, and then later as the movement grows, they also need to take care of other things. Family concerns, for instance, everyone is a celibate monk when they join and then concentrates really on the spiritual practice. And after some time, some may decide, no, let me also have a family. And then other concerns come in. So I think it's permissible. We have to excuse our super enthusiastic devotees who may have been a little irrealistic. They tried to give up the body and the mind and all their concerns, but they found out later, oops, the body and mind is still there and it has some needs. Also, you must know historically, Lord Chaitanya's movement has role examples. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan, who gave up everything.
This one, right? If you don't mind, can I just respond to the previous point before you go to the second?
Yes, please.
So that was very striking. So I read in sociological studies about the zeal of the new convert.
Yes.
That whenever somebody joins. But I had thought of it more in terms of they want to convert everyone to their path. And that is true. That is, I have got the answers and everybody accept it and everybody else in ignorance. But it can also, so that you could say almost some form of extremism or fanaticism that can come not only in terms of imposing one's ideas on others, but also imposing those ideas on oneself in a way that may not be sustainable or realistic in the long run. So it could be almost like two sides of the same thing.
Yes.
One way is external on the world and another is on one's own body and mind also. Would you echo, is that similar to what you are saying, more or less?
100%, yes. I would say the first, it starts with, wow, I found it, and nothing else counts, everything. I knew I was not becoming happy. And then the second step, wow, this, everyone should take this, and it's so good. And sometimes, Chaitanya Charan Prabhu, another very unfortunate thing comes. Yes. It's only a theoretical finding. It's only a conceptual agreement, but it is not realized. And because it's not realized, because the individual has not yet found peace and is not yet deeply rooted, he overcompensates his own weakness, his own doubts, by running into the world and trying to make everyone a follower of, because that would give him finally the peace of mind. Yes, others also agree with it. Fanaticism is always an overcompensation of weakness. We do not find realized souls fanatic. We find them very integrating, very compassionate towards others, trying to see how they can help, on what level they can help, how much to give, how much to not give, of the philosophy.
That's amazing. Like, fanaticism is an expression of overcompensation. It's such a striking thought. Once you put it in the, sometimes some truths are inchoate, they are there in the background, nascent, but once they're articulated, it makes so much sense. This is so, it's so self-evident. Once it's made evident. So, thank you, Maharaj. So one reason you mentioned was that it is just natural in the process of spiritual growth.
Yeah.
And the other reason I think you're mentioning that our exemplars are renunciates.
Yeah, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, as you know, were very renounced out. They stayed every night under a different tree. That means they had no dwelling where they would permanently be. Only later they had bhajan stalis where they would do their bhajans, Teya Kadamba and Pavan Sarova and other places. But they were very renounced. We have stories of Sanatan Goswami offering his deity every day a little, it was not even a full chapati, a little bowl of roasted grains, and then Lord Madan Mohan says, can't you just offer me a little salt at least? So he was so renounced, Sanatan Goswami, and they wrote the books, they gave the philosophy, they made the first temples of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, they established the foundation, but it is necessary to understand their sense. Their renunciation was a state of consciousness, which you call vairagya. The world had lost their colors of attraction, and only the spiritual world was attractive for them. It was a sign of their great love for Krishna. They didn't practice renunciation. They didn't have to struggle, oh, should I take a cold shower or warm shower, or should I eat less? No, that was not even in their mind. We, who are not like this, and who practice renunciation without having that state of mind, we need another medicine which the Goswamis gave us. And I want to quote it, what Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami said about proper renunciation. And you will, I don't know, how do you respond to what I said, the role model of the Vrindavan Goswamis gave us an example and an ideal of renunciation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Maharaj. I mean, it's now that you are speaking this, so a lot of thoughts are going on in my mind. Well, the Goswamis exemplified extraordinary renunciation, but in their books, they did not really standardize that. Like, one of the principles in Rupa Goswami is saying that, you know, you should, a devotee should not be neglectful in ordinary activities. And Prabhupada gives an example, like even brushing your teeth, we should be attentive. So, in one sense, we could say the exemplars are, they are exceptions. Like, is it that we would like to go at that level, but unless we have that love of God, artificially trying to go at that level can be counterproductive.
Yes. We can enter a world of concealment, actually, where outwardly we are very renounced, but inwardly we hanker after position, prestige, and sometimes even after worldly goods. What I wanted to say, Chaitanya Charan Prabhu, is the medicine which the Goswamis gave was called Yukta Vairagya, or proper renunciation. Oh, okay. And the way they articulated it was, Rupa Goswami said in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Anashaktasya Vishayan Yatarham Upayunyataha, etc. One who is not attached to satisfying his senses, yet accepts everything in relation to Krishna, is properly situated in renunciation. And then in the next verse, he makes it even more clearer. He says, that renunciation which is practiced by those desirous of impersonal liberation and which rejects things in connection with Lord Hari, thinking them to be material, is called Falgu Vairagya, external or false renunciation. It won't stand very long. So when there is something, this is Prabhupada's understanding of renunciation, that is useful for devotional service and which comes from the material world, you accept it, but not for sense gratification, but in the service for Krishna. And our body, look at this, how useful the body is. It has hands to clap during kirtan, it has a tongue to chant, it has ears to hear, it is a kirtan body. Or if you want to not just say one sadhana should be done by the body, you would say that it's a sadhana sharira, a vehicle to perform spiritual practices. It's very useful, and therefore it should be accepted and it should be maintained as a gift of God. It is a, I always say, the body is a human gift, the mind is a human gift, the heart, which can feel devotional emotions, is a gift or an endowment by the Lord. So what will the Lord think if you say, oh, I don't care, it's Maya. It's only Maya when you use it for material entanglement. If you use it for your self-realization, it is a gift that assists you. That's proper renunciation.
Yes, Maharaj, that's beautifully put. So it's not only, you could say, it's not just a kind of fanaticism or overcompensation, as you said early, but it's also, there's also philosophically, it's a misunderstanding of how things are to be done. And so when the Goswamis exemplify renunciation, it is that they are not actually, in one sense, neglecting their bodies. They are, is it that you understand that they are functioning at such a high level of spirituality that their bodily needs themselves have become minimized?
Yeah.
Because as I said, the Goswamis would eat very less, sleep very less, and but their Vairagya, of course, was not Falgu. So their renunciation was in no way coming in the way of using their body in Krishna service.
Yeah.
So if it becomes Falgu when we neglect the body and then we are not able to use the body in Krishna service.
Yeah.
So is that the proper understanding, Maharaj?
Yes. I myself made that mistake in the very early beginning of Krishna consciousness. I was very much attracted by renunciation because I come from a wealthy family and had a very opulent material life before I came. So I thought, let me do exactly the opposite. And I remember there were times when I ate for a year only one apple a day and a few raisins. And after some time, I became so emaciated and weak. My mind was also not able to concentrate. There was so much vata that one very kind devotee sat down with me and said, "This is not good for bhakti. You cannot do devotional service. You have exaggerated renunciation in an unhealthy way." And he explained then the concept of yukta vairagya. And this is what he said at that time. He said, there are three visions on the world. Karma, that means how can I enjoy the world? It is looking at the world with the intention, is there something for me to enjoy? And if yes, then how can I get it? Then there's jnana, the opposite. It looks away from the world. Oh no, the world is entangling, the jnani says. But then there is bhakti. And he said, in bhakti, we look beyond the world. We don't look at the world. We don't look away from the world. We look beyond the world. We look to Krishna and see what is useful in his devotional service and how can I develop love. Jnana, the concept of renunciation, which was maybe there in my mind when I was immature, very immature, I'm not saying I'm mature now, but in the very beginning, was I was such an accomplished sense enjoyer. Now I wanted to become an accomplished renouncer. At the early time, I was admired for money, for wealth, for opportunity, for sense gratification. Now I turned around. I wanted to be known as someone who eats very little, who sleeps very little. But the same hungry eye who wanted to be in the center was still there. Bhakti means Krishna is in the center. It's not about you enjoying or renouncing. It is about Krishna. It's a total different perspective.
Oh, beautiful. So look at the world, look away from the world, but look beyond the world. That's nicely about karma, jnana and bhakti. So we can say, in one sense, the body also represents a part of the world. So that's a very striking vision. I try to also play with words when I write on the Gita. So I had thought of a play about like sometimes we romanticize the world, we demonize the world, and then we utilize the world.
Yes, wonderful. Wonderful.
Thank you, Maharaj. So, Maharaj, with respect to the body, I think most devotees have now recognized the need to take care of the body. In one sense, as our movement is also growing, many of our devotees, senior devotees, are becoming older, where the need for bodily care becomes more evident also. If we could shift the discussion from the body to the mind a little bit, unless you want to elaborate something on the body further. But it seems till now, emotional care is something, or taking care of the emotional side or the emotional needs, mental health, emotional health, that sometimes is still seen as something which is this really necessary? If somebody is having mental health challenges, we often say mantra is manastrayate iti mantra. That the mantra frees us from all mental problems. So, now we understand that earlier you started by talking about a parallel lanes, that we take care of our bhakti and we also take care of our body. That is because essential vehicle for serving Krishna. But to what extent do we also take care of the mind, not just through bhakti practices, but through some other measures also which may be required for the care of the mind?
Yes, wonderful, wonderful. You have a very deeply engaging way of looking at subjects or of issues which are of need for the spiritual practitioner. Well, in this world, we find a model called the pyramid of needs. It was presented for the first time by Maslow.
It's Maslow's hierarchy.
And he used to say, first we have physiological needs, food, water, air, and sleep. And when they are taken care, we need some safety needs, needs for structure, for predictability, that I live in the ashram and here I have a place and there is a certain structure. The morning, the day starts with such and such day. And then he said love and belonging are necessary. I was once talking to His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj and asked him, oh, you have here, wonderful.
Yeah, I thought I just put it in here, yeah,
if
you
would like to elaborate. Yeah. Wow, we are in one mind, Chaitanya Charan Prabhu. Just asked our viewers to look at this pyramid a little bit so that you understand our discussions very nicely. So there are the physiological needs. You need to have food. If you don't eat for 1 year, I mean, most probably, most of us will give in after 1 week already. Then there is problem when there is no sleep and you become totally sleep deprived. You will not have your sadhana. You can't concentrate on chanting. Then when that is fulfilled, you go a step higher into your safety needs, then to the belongingness and love needs. And I wanted to say here, this is of course a material, it is not coming from bhakti, this pyramid, but it is useful to a certain extent. And I once asked Radhanath Maharaj, at what stage does someone decide to join the Krishna consciousness movement? And Maharaj said so nicely, it's not because of being convinced of the philosophy that someone primarily joins because of this reason. He said, it's because he feels these people are better than the other people, which I I have association with. I want to rather be with them than with the other people who seem to live on a sinking ship and so on. So they want to belong. They want to have friendships amongst devotees. I mean, don't we hear this from Rupa Goswami? Friendship with like-minded devotees is necessary. And then it goes to esteem needs. I would say it's more being in my dharma. For instance, I am a preacher. Prabhupada told me this. I would not do very well as, let us say, cleaning a place. I would do a lousy job because I would be, my dharma seems to be different, my swadharma. So also you get a lot of dissatisfaction when you don't find your dharma, and if you find it, you will be respected by others. Oh, he is a good cleaner. He is a good preacher. He is this and that. It's a definite need. I've looked at this pyramid of need. I found it was useful talking about physical well-being, emotional well-being, and if you go higher, it goes into social well-being. Because these things are simply, this is the way the world is. It is. But what the materialist doesn't always have so clear is, for what do you do this? For what purpose is this existing? What should you attain by taking care of? Why do this? And I would like to, just because it is so important to understand this, I would like to share something which Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote about loving oneself. For a devotee, this self-care or loving oneself, some people say, sounds just so opposite to all he wants to do. He wants to love Krishna. He wants to attend to Krishna. He wants to care for Krishna's concern. And then all of a sudden, what is this new age, wishy-washy, love yourself and take care of yourself? This objection is justified when you don't take care of yourself with the right motivation, with the right goal, then you will be totally entangled in Maya. But if you do this with a proper mood, then yes, your progress will be there. Here, there's a question. What is the prayer of one who loves Krishna? And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur answers this. With my body, mind, and speech, may my love for the reddish lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu increase day by day. And then he says, let me have unflinching love for the Vaishnavas. Let me have love for Krishna's qualities. Let me have love for the holy name. Let me love those people who have taken shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. And then he ends. Let me also love myself.
Oh.
Who am inclined towards Krishna, so that I may attain devotion to him. Let me repeat this. Let me also love myself, who am inclined toward Krishna, so that I may attain devotion to him. So after taking care of his bhakti, he wants to love Lord Chaitanya, the devotees, the chanting of the holy name. He says, I am on the trying to be on the path of bhakti. I'm inclined to Krishna. So in that way, with that perspective, I will take care of myself so that I can reach his lotus feet. See, everything in this world, dualistic world, you can do it right, you can do it wrong. If you take care of yourself without the perspective of going to Krishna, you become a selfish egomaniac. And we know these people. We know these people. We have seen them everywhere who are only, now, I like it like this. My way or the highway, because this is how I feel well if I do it like this. This is the sure road to material entanglement. But if you say, okay, let me take care of myself so that I'm fit and free for Krishna, I don't have to, that I can dance for him for many hours, that I can think of a new book to write, like Chaitanya Charan. You must have written by now 30 books or so. For this you need to be free to do this, of concerns and so on. Then it is very good. There could be many examples of how one thing done in the therapeutic way is good, but the same thing done for just sense gratification is very bad for you. So you have to do self-care in a spiritual frame.
It's beautiful. That quote is remarkable from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Maybe after the podcast, you could share that quote, and we'll put that as a image so that the readers can also see it in the when we do the editing. And another point which you mentioned toward the end was that we talked about therapeutic use. So normally we talk about that more in terms of material things, that material objects that is often used in connection with Yukta Vairagya. But what you are saying is that can also apply to our inner life. That taking care of our mind and self-care or self-love, as you mentioned, that it can, if it is within a devotional context, then it becomes can become a part of our inner healing. So that's beautiful, Maharaj. Just one point about this. So is it that say we become lovable, or we should love ourselves after we become pure enough to be lovable, or is it at whatever condition level we are, at that time also we should still love ourselves, not in a narcissistic sense, but in the sense of in a functional sense or in a healthy sense? So is that love for oneself an advanced stage of devotion? Because in that quote of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that comes almost at the end. So can a condition, or can or should a conditioned soul also love oneself, a sadhaka?
As you know, the word atma or self carries different connotations according to the various perspectives you know. I wouldn't say love the body, you know, or love the mind. I would say here the word care is more appropriate. Okay. Yes, that it is taken care of, like if you take care of your vehicle, because you know it can carry you to where you need to go. I believe this is very much part of Varnashram. Chaitanya Charan Prabhu, we here in the North European zone, at one stage were thinking a little bit of Varnashram. We noted that we have a responsibility to take care of old people. We noted we have a responsibility to take care of children, of people in the congregation, and we looked for a system that would give us insights, first of all, where to place everyone, and then to see their needs and their rights also, which they have in a society. And we worked on that quite elaborately. Srila Prabhupada had told our leader that he should explore this Varnashram model and see how it could be applied for ISKCON. And it was at that time, this was 25 years back, it was really back. At that time, we were thinking of Varnashram. Then we totally forgot it because it was too difficult to bring it into an ISKCON context. We had to take care of our temples, of our farm projects, of printing and distributing literature, and we left this. Then a few years ago, when I started to look for a model that is holistic, a spiritual presentation for the outside world, where they would see the body, mind, and people are well taken care. I read a book by Bhaktivinod Thakur, which really was a mind turner for me. It's the book Chaitanya Shikshamrita, I believe.
Yes.
And it is an elaborate description how to apply Varnashram to spiritually minded people. And in that book, he said the whole purpose of this is to take care of people's spiritual, physical, emotional, and social well-being. And with this, I had it. It may not be possible, maybe it is, but we were not successful to institute Varnashram on a broader level in the society. It was not possible for us. I know there are very, very serious efforts on the Hungarian farm, which were spearheaded or are spearheaded by His Holiness Sivaram Maharaj. But we could not do it. I saw these things, physical, emotional, and spiritual, social and spiritual well-being, then I thought, okay, let me first of all practice like this, and I started to do exercises and yoga for physical well-being. The sadhana part was already in part. I didn't look at it so much. Emotional well-being, I thought, well, what to do? Well, I found out when I'm focused on a service for Krishna, which I do according to my natural inclination, my dharma, I feel just happy. I feel in my place. I feel satisfied. And then I thought, okay, Sachinanda Swami, you have been a preacher. You have done something on the social platform. But have you done it in your early enthusiasm? Maybe you look at it anew. And then I found out, yes, I need to now no longer preach to increase our membership or to be known as a preacher, an irresistible preacher. I need to do it with compassion. And I discovered this value of compassion and I was happy to read in Jiva Dharma that compassion should be the main dharma of a Vaishnava in this world. So yes, we are there to help others, to benefit society, to be compassionate friends. That's my journey, so to say.
Thank you very much for sharing this beautifully. So if I understand right, and try to retrace the flow, what you're saying is that that if we are actually going to be compassionate to people, then we need to be holistically compassionate. That it is a part of our spiritual growth to to actually take care of the complete person. And we can't just say, I'm going to take care of your soul and I don't bother about anything else. So in one sense, Varanashram or any such initiative to take care of people financially, align them with their psychophysical nature. So, sorry, was I audible, Maharaj?
You were audible, but your picture froze, but now you're okay. Back in.
Okay, thank you, Maharaj. So I was just mentioning that, so it seems that actually taking care of the body and the mind in terms of helping oneself and others become aligned with one's own psychophysical nature and providing a supportive community that people can belong to. And so this is a part of Varanashram, and we could say this is not mundane, it's an expression of compassion so that people can smoothly move in their spiritual journey. Was that the connection?
Yes. You frame it very nicely in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. I like to also frame it in another way. The way I had a few very personal encounters with Srila Prabhupada, but only a few, two or three, but he was very personal and caring to me. And I would like to only say here one which impressed me. Now, it was in Sweden, and I had not slept the night. So when I came to Prabhupada's lecture, I already knew I will be tired. So better I stand at the end of the, behind all the devotees. But even in standing, my body started to sway from tiredness. And then Prabhupada, he just interrupted his lectures and said, let him go to bed. He does so much service. He should sleep now. I think it's just human nature that you see someone has a real need, not just a sensual desire, but a real need. And then a human kind person will say, yes, no. I was thinking he would chastise me. You are not interested in philosophy. You're only good in eating and sleeping. You are not really my disciple. I thought when he stopped his lecture, he would say like this. But then he said, no, you need to do so much service. You just go and take your rest now and sleep well until you are strong and healthy. It is compassion. It's a human nature. It's not just a philosophically understood need or strategy. It is something which a mature person will do. Like for some, Prabhupada wrote this very famous letter. First comes your health, then comes your sadhana, then comes your seva. He wrote this letter. I would like to know the context in which he wrote it. Did he write this to a devotee who was ill? Then this statement looks, we understand it in one way. Did he mean it as a general prescription for all the devotees? I must admit to you, I do not know the context so that I cannot answer this. But at least there is a letter of Prabhupada where he says, first health, then sadhana, then seva. Although we usually think seva first, then sadhana, well, I don't know. Maybe you know what I want to say. We may put the order in a different way.
Yeah, we may even invert the order completely. Sometimes for seva, we make it the highest priority. And we extend ourselves so much that both health and sadhana get neglected.
Yeah.
Yes, Maharaj. So now, going back to the earlier point of Varanashram, so if I understand right, when you're talking about Varanashram, it's not so necessarily so much in terms of like we create an elaborate social structure. That could also be a possibility. But if I understand it, what you're saying is, as an individual, applying Varnashram would mean trying to align ourselves, align our services, our engagements with what we understand is about our nature.
Yes.
So that will itself give us some amount of satisfaction, and that will lead to a little bit more of emotional health and robustness.
Yeah.
Were you using Varnashram in that sense?
Yeah, I always think we need to understand the philosophy like this. If we cannot apply all the steps for cultural reasons, for manpower reasons, for so many reasons, then we need to see the essence and go with the essence. And Varnashrama is a model for taking care of these needs, the spiritual needs, the physical and emotional needs, the social and the social needs. So I would also further recommend, if you want to find your the proper way in which you take care of the needs, it's sometimes very, very useful to talk with others. Best is with spiritually mature people. In the old times, these were brahmanas. And see, how do you see me, Prabhu? What have you noticed is my lacking, and where can I improve? It helps, because often we are a little bit blind when it comes to these things. We are sick because we didn't know how to keep a healthy way. We are sad because we have not known how to have emotional well-being. We are maybe spiritually undernourished because we have not known ourselves how to nourish ourselves properly. So therefore, people can sometimes act as a healthy mirror in which you can see all those parts in you which you cannot see without the help of a mirror.
Okay. So you are talking here more in terms of some guiding association.
Yes.
That can help us understand ourselves.
Yes.
So then, whether when we are taking care of our emotions, is it, or taking care of us emotionally, are we doing that in a healthy way? Are we doing that in the right way? Or are we doing it in terms of, say, pandering to ourselves? So what would be a healthy and unhealthy way? We will be able to better understand that by having other devotees who guide us. Is that...
You have a very keen intellect which can put order into different subjects. Yes.
Thank you. Okay, Maharaj. So now, going back to a slightly earlier question, if somebody is, you earlier mentioned three things, that physical disease, I think you talked about mental distress and social isolation. All these three will result if somebody doesn't take care of themselves holistically. So to some extent, can all of these be taken care of by more chanting? Like somebody's relationship, either in their devotional circles or in their other family circles, if they're not devotees. If those relations are not good, can greater chanting heal those relationships and satisfy their emotional needs? Or in one sense, to be able to chant attentively, we need a certain level of emotional stability or emotional health. So are these two distinct things, or are they related? Can one replace the other?
Like so many things in devotional life, everything depends on your adhikar, your capability, your present state. Chaitanya Charan Prabhu, I am personally very convinced that if someone can take full shelter at the holy name will purify the heart from all the things which should not be there. And one will feel a deep sense of a relatedness to Krishna. So at that time, one will heal on many levels. Now, I do know that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he prescribed the holy name also in terms of physical illness. He told his brahmacharis they didn't need to go to a medical doctor. I'm supposing this was not in severe cases like cancer or so, but you know, mostly he said they should chant. Now, if someone can take shelter in the chanting of the holy name with body, mind, and soul, many, many things in his life will become auspicious. The Bhakti Lata beach will grow, and it is described in the Madhurya Kadambini that if you water the seed of bhakti and it grows, then the Bhakti Lata will sprout two leaves. One is Kleshagni, you will become free from misery, and Shubhada. The other is you will feel feel auspiciousness coming into your life. I have been given the service to give retreats on japa and also kirtan. We have many kirtan melas and so on. And I have seen miracles happening for those who have taken full shelter in the holy name. I have seen people become even cured from diseases who made a turn and taken care. Still, I don't think it necessarily is an either-or discussion. I think someone who is chanting and takes full care in chanting will understand, what do I need here to make my chanting well? For instance, I have seen that I do personal japa retreats where I chant from the morning till the evening, and I've seen I can be much more awake if I do just for 20 minutes a few exercises that get the circulation going, so that the body will and mind will not feel tired. I don't think this is necessarily in contradiction. I realize if I would be full of pure love of Godhead, I don't think Gokisho Das Babaji or Jagannath Das Babaji would do yoga in the chanting sessions. I don't think so. At least it's not heard. I do know that Prabhupada did morning walks because it was good for his circulation. I think it's a little bit a question of common sense and how much you take care of the body and so on. Observe yourself. What does the body need in order to be active in devotional service? Can you do Nirjal Ekadasi and do your service? You know, in Ekadasi where you neither drink nor eat anything, or is it maybe better if you drink a glass of water? You have to see that yourself, and you will have the intelligence to decide these questions. At the time when you make Krishna and your advancement in Krishna consciousness your main goal, if this main goal goes, then many things will come out of balance and out of synchronicity in your life. But nice, and since you asked, yeah, let us speak more on chanting, Chaitanya Chandracharan. I'm talking much more about chanting and of Krishna Katha these days than the Tree of Life.
Nice.
First things first, should go
yes.
first.
That's beautiful. So I think the Adhikar point which you made, it addresses a lot of things. That like even Prabhupada talked about Rasleela, he quoted the verse that hearing Rasleela will become purified. But if you are becoming agitated, then don't hear the Rasleela.
Yes.
So we could say similarly about caring self-care. If not doing that is creating a problem, and doing that is helping, then we can do it. So it, for some, like Gaurishas Babaji might not need it, but we may need it. So I think the Adhikar, somehow I feel that the concept of Adhikar is often talked more in terms of like abstract levels than in terms of practical application. Yes, we understand pure devotees are constantly absorbed in love for Krishna, but in terms of that each of us needs to understand our Adhikar and practice accordingly, that sometimes is not adequately emphasized. So if a devotee wants to determine their Adhikar, is that also something which consult devotees or consult senior devotees and understand, or by self-observation we can understand our Adhikar also?
Yeah. Self-observation is very, very necessary. Self introspection, but I would say aided self-observation.
Okay.
Therefore, the philosophy is very important. When you read and understand the books well, there will be a time when you will integrate the teachings, and then you can really decide and see most of the things yourself, because you are helped by a perfect source. This is called Shastra Shakshu. You see the world through the scriptures, through that lens, and through the lens of the scriptures, whoop, you see many, many things much more clearer than without that lens. And then, if you want to go to others to advise you, make sure they know you. Make sure that the others whom you asked have affection for you. They are concerned for your growth and well-being, because only then, when they know you and they have the motivation to compassionately help you, is their advice really suitable. But self-observation can help us a lot to see the Adhikar. You gave this beautiful example of listening to Rasa Leela and other such related katha. You can definitely see when it purifies you, then you are bliss of Krishna consciousness. But if this should agitate you and you begin to think of the man and woman relationship, then for now you can observe this is not good for my spiritual life at this stage. Let me put this book on the pile of books which I read later when I have increased my spiritual life. So self-observation can immediately help you. And I believe that this manana is a very important part of the life of a devotee. First comes shravanam, he must hear. Then comes manana, that means he must reflect on what he has heard, and in this way also do and include self-reflection or self-observation in it. And then he should see, what can I apply in the Nididhyasana and on the third step. And then your life will be increasingly spiritual. You hear something, you reflect about it in relationship to you, the world, and so many other things. And then you see what of the many things you have heard and reflected can you now, today, apply in your Krishna conscious practice. And then it will go very, very beautiful. Yes, the scriptures are meant to make us independently thoughtful. There's such a statement. do you know, Chaitanya Charan, a guru should have one goal in teaching. He should teach in such a way that the disciple knows what to do even in his absence. And the example is given of the son who gives his light or her light to the moon, so that even when the sun sets in the western horizon, there is a source of light. The moon can shine on its own. It has given, it has received the rays. So in our spiritual training, our spiritual life, we should really take care that we become, have the self observation and self that's the goal of the whole learning process. The other is to fall madly in love.
Yes, of course. It's a very beautiful point, the way you phrased it. In say, we could say material books on counseling, I had read the success of a counselor is to make oneself redundant. That, but I had not thought about it in spiritual terms. But what you're saying is that in terms of the mood of devotional dependence, we often emphasize, you know, that janme janme prabhu se, that I am eternally dependent on the spiritual master's mercy. So in terms of that mood, it will always be there. But in terms of practical decision making, a disciple should be able to make decisions.
Yes,
in the absence of the spiritual master also.
Like Prabhupada would say about us, when will they ever learn? You know.
Oh, okay. And this is quite a radical thought. Even the example of sun and the moon is also very striking. Sometimes we become maybe a little fear, or sometimes a little fear is there in the hearts, or it's maybe sometimes it will trigger in the heart also, that in the name of being independently thoughtful, we will become independent.
Yeah.
But what you are making the point is that it may well happen that we may not have the guidance at some time, that the spiritual master may not be accessible for whatever reasons. So that being able to take one's own decisions, it's not necessarily something which is whimsical or defiant. It may not be a sign of defiance. It can also be the sign of the success of a disciple or success of a guru in training the disciple also.
100%. But the disciple should always remain devotionally dependent. If you don't show your mercy to me, I'm nothing, like this. But he should learn, and he should be able to give a lecture where the spiritual master says, wow, he has learned nicely. The spiritual master is in the disciple's lecture, and he says, this disciple has learned properly. I have seen this in mature disciples. They are devotionally always dependent, they are always love their spiritual master, but they are able to make decisions, to lead, to guide others, and so on, without having to always ask. Only in times when it's not yet clear, there will be asked. But yes, the guru wants his disciple to be independently thoughtful and devotionally, of course, connected, janme janme prabhu se.
Yes, so this point of, is to elaborate a little bit on the point of independent thoughtfulness, that with respect to, so if somebody feels by their own independent thoughtfulness that I'm at a phase of my life where I need to maybe at this time take greater care of my body, or take greater care of my mind and my emotions and my relationships, And so would this also change over the years? Is it, say, necessary that over the years a person, say, maybe in, like earlier you said, earlier we may, in the early years of our life, we may neglect our body. Then afterwards, we may recognize that, okay, I have to take greater care. Then as we grow further, when we become authentically detached, we may also maybe neglect or transcend, we could say more appropriately, transcend some aspects of the body's demands. So is this like a linear progression, or could there be ups and downs? That means in a devotee's life, there could be phases when they, irrespective of whether they are more advanced or less advanced, could there be phases when they need to take greater care of their emotional side? The physical side, we understand. If somebody falls sick and they have a severe sickness, then now, then definitely they need to take care. But can a devotee, can even a very senior or advanced devotee experience some emotional turbulences which may need the necessity that they take greater care of their emotional side?
Yes, I want to give you what we always thought is that spiritual life. Oops, I don't.
Okay, yeah, yes, I can see it's a straight linear graph.
Yeah, it's like this. It is one upward graph, yeah, right? Okay. But as a on a closer inspection, you see that sometimes a person has to take care more of the body. He may be ill and has to take maybe a half a year more concentrated attention to the body, and then he goes back into the old trajectory. That is, but what I have seen, Chaitanya Charan, is that spiritual life is a little bit, I'm not such a good draw, it's like a spiral.
Spiral, okay.
Yes, and in a spiral it goes up, but you always come to the same point which you were before. Let me give you an example. As a bhakta, a young devotee, you might have been disturbed when someone ate your gulab jamun, and you become very angry. So your false ego reacted. Who do you think you are? I'm 2 weeks early and more in the society of Krishna conscious. I'm your senior by 2 weeks, and so on. Then it, yes. Then he may go further, advance further. Then he may be a sannyasi in the has a danda, stands there in the kirtan, and one young perspiring devotee whirls around and loses his balance and falls on the sannyasi, and the sannyasi loses his danda. Now there are two responses. He could give a mature response and say, please, maybe you have spun too much and lost your balance, and not make a big thing out of it. Or he could, as a sannyasi, become totally disturbed, like he became as a bhakta, when someone stole his gulab jamun. And he may be very, very angry all of a sudden, not in control of his emotions. At that time, after the incident, he would sit down and say, oh, sorry, I made a mistake. I was too much hurt on my sensitive ego. I should definitely improve here. So in other words, the same issues come up again and again. Issues of material attachments come up even as you go higher. Even we understand at the level of bhava, there are still issues that come up, like aparadas, making offenses, and so on. So you need, I think, the spiral model where you move upwards, but you come to the same areas, east, west, south areas, and serves us more in our spiritual advancement and sheds a genuine light on genuine self-purification and transformation of the heart. So I wanted to say this in response to your question, do issues come up again? By yes, and then they are left and are not important because you move forward and onwards in your life. But then again, you might confront them, the same issue, but in a more mature way, hopefully, hopefully.
Okay, since this, so and now I'm understanding why you use the spiral metaphor. So it's that, say, a devotee who faces a health challenge, and when they are, say, 5 years in Krishna consciousness, and a devotee who faces a health challenge, or we could say even a emotional, relational challenge also, when they are 25 years or when they are 45 years, the challenge itself may be the same in broad principle. And in all three cases, they may need to focus a little bit more on dealing with those challenges. But based on their spiritual advancement, they will have greater maturity, greater insight. So it's like they will be facing that challenge itself from a higher perspective.
Yes, and deal totally different with it. Sometimes the health challenge for an advanced devotee, he will say, I don't care any longer for the body. Let it degenerate. I don't want any medical invasion. It's time for me to leave this world. He will not be so disturbed about the health challenge as he was when he was a bhakta.
Okay. So overall, when you give the example of a spiral, that means again it comes back to the point of adhikar and self-observation, that I have to know where I am on the spiral. So that also means that just because a senior devotee dealt with this problem in this way doesn't necessarily mean that I also have to deal with the problem in the same way.
Yeah.
I may have to deal with it in a different way.
Yeah. Yes.
So, yeah. I just give one example, if in case you would like to address that. Like, one devotee recently mentioned to me that, you know, whenever I fall sick, I never take painkillers. So, I asked, why is that? Actually, I talked about this with different devotees. And one devotee said, no, painkillers have so many side effects and other things, I want to avoid those. But then another devotee mentioned to me that, if by my past karma, I'm supposed to go through some pain by taking painkillers, what I'm just trying to escape that karma. So let me get that pain right now. But then I talked with another devotee, this is the diversity, they said that, okay, but if that pain is so much that I can't chant, I can't study, I can't do any service, then even if it's my karma, it's like I can't bear so much karma right now. So better let me take some painkiller and maybe that karma will come in the future. So another devotee gave me a response that actually in one sense, if we take the karma argument too far, we can say that where do you stop? If the weather is so too hot, should we use a fan? The discomfort because of the heat also is because of my karma only. I'm living in a place where it's so hot or so cold because it's my karma. So should we not try to deal with any discomfort at all? So in one sense, we could say all of these could be valid personal approaches based on, so is, when a person is at different levels of the spiral. could you say that like that?
Wonderfully said, yes. And the different levels on the spiral obviously relate to one's own adhika or capability, and one should not imitate the ways of another. Yes, very, very nicely summarized.
Thank you, Maharaj. Maybe just, can we have two, three more questions, Maharaj, before we finish?
If you wish, yes.
Thank you. So, is it that in our scriptures, we don't see much examples of self-care? We see more of the self-denial or renunciation more. So could it be that as Kali Yuga is, we could say, progressing or regressing, depending on the perspective, as Kali Yuga is moving forward, is it that we will need, we means as individuals, as well as in our outreach people are coming to us, a greater degree of self-care will be required because people are more disturbed, there's far greater stress and other things, and even the family structures and the relationships are more unstable today. So could it be that self-care is a great, if you consider 50 years before and today, society has become much more disintegrated now as compared to a few decades ago. So will self-care play a greater role in a sadhaka's life in today's world as compared to, say, a more traditional setting?
I do think so. I just recently read in the Bhagavatam about the rule of King Prithu, and he was described to be a father to each single one of his citizens, which included even the animals, the prajas. So that was the ideal, at least in the old times, that people should be cared for. And whenever that is not happening, then the existential needs which are there, which need to be also fulfilled, need to be fulfilled in a different way. We can't expect the government or to take care. Their hands may be bound in so many ways. Yes, so definitely in a progressive Kali Yuga, where the effects of ill management and so many unfortunate circumstances become increased, you need to see how you can remain functional in your spiritual life and take care. But it is so important for me to again and again repeat, when I will go in a few days to Goloka Dham to celebrate Jamashtami, or this weekend we have a nice Ratha Yatra in Berlin. I need to go there with a car, so I will take care that there is enough benzene in the car, that there is enough pressure on the tires, because I want to go to Ratha Yatra. I want to go to Krishna on Jamashtami. You always need in spiritual life to know what is your satya. Why are you doing all of this? What is the goal of your life? Then only the practices get life and bring you also there. So in the same way, this idea of self-care and when you do self-care, also think of other devotees. Are they taken care of? Can they function nicely? I don't just want to take care that my resting place is peaceful. Let me see that they also have peaceful resting places so that they can rest and so on. Therefore, self-care, Chaitanya Charan Prabhu, always needs to have a social dimension. Otherwise, it needs to have a social dimension and a spiritual dimension. Otherwise, just to take care of the bodily and physical well-being is not good enough. Underneath, there needs to be roots of the tree of life, your spiritual sadhana, where you take care of, where you attend to Krishna and offer to Krishna, and over your self-care is the social dimension where you take care of others. Otherwise it becomes selfishness.
Oh, okay. That's beautiful. In fact, that was my next question. So social dimension means what are we contributing to society?
Yeah, or to others also.
Others, okay.
Yes.
Yeah. In a, whatever be our social circle, it can be our family, yeah, it can be our community, whatever be our area of influence. So in today's world, there is a lot of emphasis on self-awareness, self-expression, you could say. This is who I am. And often people expect that society should change to accept me for who I am. And now this can come in various areas. It can come in terms of, we don't want to go into specific, it can come in terms of various gender types, and it can come in terms of various other orient areas also. But the idea that self-expression, that this is who I am, and the society has to change to accept who I am. To you earlier talked about swabhava and engaging according to our swabhava. So where does it, when we are acting according to our nature and contributing to society, and when we, in the name of acting according to who we end up disrupting society and we are entering out to pandering to ourselves. So would this difference be primarily measured by social contribution? Because in today's world, people say that, you know, society should accommodate me. Society should change to accommodate me rather. That is, I'm not talking about devotional circle necessarily, but especially in the postmodern worldview, there is this tendency towards self-expression becoming quite disruptive towards social structures and, of course, by extension, toward traditional, cultural, religious, and even spiritual structures. So to what extent can, or how can self-expression be harmonized with tradition or existing structures, be they social, cultural, traditional?
Yes. Yes. Self-expression is definitely a need, but it is only one leg of the human body. There's another leg that is to take care of others, and then there is even a third leg to take care of your eternal Dharma. I was thinking about Dharma a lot in a life school which I'm developing, called the Vedic Way. And in that life school, we have found out that Dharma stands on three legs. One is, it's called Svadharma, your own Dharma. It relates to how you are now, the human being. You, someone is an artist, someone is a priest, someone is a field worker, someone is an author, and so on. That's his Svadharma. That's how he is. That are the skills and talents which he is born with. Then comes the second Dharma, very important. It's called Manushya Dharma. It's the ethical codexes. Don't lie to others, don't steal, don't hurt. This ahimsa, don't hurt others by following your Svadharma or your self-expression, what you can do. And then comes the last leg, Sanatan Dharma. I have actually given the analogy of a house, the Dharma house. Everyone needs to live in his Dharma house. The fundament is Svadharma. The walls relate with the environment. That is Manushya Dharma. And the roof, which protects you from everything, is Sanatan Dharma. And everything must be in place. Let us take a successful businessman who at the same time harms others with his business. He may make money. He may be a moneymaker. He has a good intelligence for seeing opportunities for business. But if his manushya dharma is not intact, how to take care of the environment of others, oh, he will be a disturbance. He is ethical towards others and so on. But if he does not have a sense who they really are, they're parts of Krishna, and he himself is not believing in Krishna, he's not believing in God, then his help will be limited in what he will address only the body, but not the essential nature of a person. The spiritual nature as a soul. So one thing alone is not enough. That is my point. You need to have everything. A house is not a house if you only have a fundament at the ground. You need you need walls and you need a roof.
This is beautiful, Maharaj. So Swadharma and Manushya Dharma. In one sense, it's such, once again you say it, it becomes such common sense. So a person may be like a warrior or a fighter, but they are doing their swadharma by fighting. But if they are reckless, they are destructive, they are exploitative, then their swadharma is not contributing. So Maharaj, the word manushya dharma, is it used specifically in our shastra, in our tradition, or it is more of a common sense understanding?
Yeah, there are different technical terms being used. I'm referring to the ethical codexes where you, in relationship to others, they are in Patanjali speaks of the yamas and niyamas and
yes,
these normal rules for a living. I found this word manushya dharma in I think it was the Mahabharata. It's swadharma is in relationship to yourself. The second dharma is in relationship to others, and the third dharma is in relationship to God, to Krishna.
Oh, okay, that's beautiful. We could almost, in some ways, maybe we can correlate this with what Krishna talks about in Bhagavad Gita. Adi Bhuta, Adi Yajna, Adi Daiva, and Adi Yajna, those three circles. The body, mind, you could say the society or environment, and then the Supreme. That's beautiful, Maharaj. And so what you're saying is that all three need to be addressed. That's when we are actually living in harmony.
Yeah.
Okay.
Many things, Chaitanya, Charan Prabhu, are compositive, that many things come together, and one thing alone is not enough. For instance, health. You need to sleep enough for health, or a minimum of 6 hours, but you also need to eat. Second thing is there. You need to breathe also. Oh, very important for health. You need what else? Water. The health is, and you need to exercise the body. In other words, health is a phenomena which you only can experience when the composites are there, the different elements which come together in such a way as to create the desired outcome of health. So in the same way, dharma requires a few things to be really there. I have so often seen in the West, we have these very famous singers. Oh, they sing and they earn. When they sing at one place, they may earn a few million dollars and so on. And they are definitely in their dharma. They are singers. They are. Varnashram doesn't have the highest social rung for them. They are shudras in Varnashram, but our society glorifies them. But some of them, what ethical life they have. They drink. They are very bad to their friends and their partners. And for money, they will sell their head even, and so on. This is not a successful life. Although they have realized one type of Dharma, to sing. Yes, very beautifully, very, very talented, very expressive, and so on and so forth. They need all the three things to be successful in life.
It's beautiful, Maharaj. Yeah, it's so true that when I was studying my engineering, I could see that some students really had passion for engineering. They would just, if they get a challenge, they could just forget everything and spend hours and hours on doing those things. The kind of absorption, the kind of attraction they had was huge. But at other times, they were into unhealthy habit, they were to smoke and drink and do other things and use abusive language at times. So in one sense they were aligned, but aligned with one aspect of their nature, but other aspect I could say their overall contribution to society or even to their own well-being was not really so much. So this is beautiful. I never thought of this in terms of dharma as you could say, we align with ourselves, but we also align with the bigger wholes that we are a part of. So the more we are aligned, then the more we can be healthily productive.
Yeah. And Chaitanya Charan, these students, for instance, if they are unethical, they will have a miserable life because they Dharma is something which... you can't break. If you don't follow it, you won't break through it. It will break you. You know, it's a law of nature. So they have to be aligned. I have seen so many successful people in one field who were just crying to me, why am I so unhappy? Why am I so ill at ease with myself? I do what I like to do. And I said, let's look at the other areas. Are you also there? It's almost like you are like a person, I said, who said, I eat salad, but I have lung cancer. Why? And I said, well, maybe you smoke. Oh, yes, I'm smoking. I'm smoking. Then you need to do everything to have a healthy life, not just eat a salad and then smoke unhealthily. That will kill you.
My God, very graphic example of salad on one side, but smoking on the other side. Now, maybe this could apply even in devotional circles also. Sometimes some devotees may be prolific book distributors or fundraisers, but then in other aspects of their life, maybe they are a little domineering, they are a little disagreeable, and sometimes they may be like phenomenally successful in terms of their service. But then afterward, they may even leave Krishna Bhakti. So it is like what you said about the composite, that lack of balance may not just happen in material life, but it can also happen in devotional life with respect to one area having focus. Isn't it? Right?
Yes, it is exactly like that. And we have seen how devotees, yes, have due to an oversight. It may not be bad intention, it may just be an oversight. For instance, an oversight in dealing properly with others, respecting others. That's why our Radhanath Maharaj always stresses serve others. In whatever you do, serve. The position which you have in this life, you will leave it behind. You will, when you die, you will not take with you your position. Your bibek, your beads, at the final examination, will also stay behind. Your whole bookshelf with beautiful spiritual scriptures, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, will leave. Will be left behind, but what you will take with you is, was I serving in whatever position I was in this life. You will take with you the taste and the holy name. The beads may stay. And you will also take the wisdom and the insights, the realizations with you, although the books stay behind. So these, we should never be in illusion. We should go for those things which are of timeless value. Position is not, but have I served, is of timeless value. The beads, we will, even in this life, someone may lose his beads and may take new beads. They are also left behind, but the taste and the holy name, that will be always with you. Even if you can't find your beads, you will chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And also your insights and wisdom from the scriptures, they will be with you. Even if you have not a single book with you, because you have to travel some distant place and luggage is limited, you can only take so much. Still, when you meet someone, you will be able to explain to them verses from the Gita and so on. So these immaterial things, these invisible things, if you so want, they are the real success in life.
So it is beautiful. We talk about material possessions not going with us, but it also applies in one sense to even in the spiritual life. We have some possessions which we have to leave behind. We have possessions which we have to leave behind also, even if they are within a spiritual society. That's quite a sobering thought. So going back to your tree metaphor, in one sense, you mentioned the word invisible, so that struck me. So it's almost like when we go from, if we consider transfer, we go from one, it's like the stem and the crown is not going to go, but the root is going to go with us.
Yeah, the root is invisible. You can't see it.
The priority needs to be taking care of the invisible. Inspiring talk, inspiring discussion, especially this last point, quite sobering at the same time. Contemplate. Would you like to other point?
Chaitanya Charan Prabhu, at the moment it was cutting and I could not, there was no sentence, but I think it will come back. It always cuts after 45 minutes or so, I have observed. So maybe please repeat your question.
Oh, sorry. Okay. So I was saying that this is a very beautiful, sobering. It will stay with
her. I can't hear. I think, can you hear me?
Yeah, clearly.
Clearly even. Please try again, because I know it always goes and then it, but it returns also. Please say something.
Oh, is it better now, Maharaj?
Yes, now it's very good, very good. Now again, I cannot hear a single word, and also your picture is frozen. Maybe the connection to your computer, is it in or and everything?
Yeah, actually, I have a speed test which is saying it is going and coming. Just checking. Yeah, is it
now what you said?
It's not there now.
Well, I could hear you saying, "I have a speed test." I think it's going. It says to me, "It's going and coming." I could hear that.
Does it come back now? It's showing it's come back now.
Yes, but speak a little longer, please, so that we
Okay, yes, Maharaj. So, I was saying that this point which you mentioned about that only our insights, our devotion, our taste is going to go with us. Even in a Bhagavatam set, our feedback is not going to go with us. It's a very deep, it's a very sobering thought to contemplate on. So I thought that maybe this is the point we can conclude, or if you have any concluding points further to share, you can share, and then I will summarize what we discussed today.
Yes. In this, in the perspective of bhakti, we speak really of a relationship of service, a devotional relationship of service to Krishna. And while we go through our daily life, we should always ask ourselves this question: how is my relationship with Krishna? How often do I think of him? What is the motivation in which I do my service? Do I wish to satisfy him? And how can I increase my taste and absorption in the holy name? Just like a tree is...
Recording stopped. Recording in progress.
Just like a tree is nourished and maintained by the roots, a devotee's life is nourished and maintained by his absorption in bhakti or devotional service. And this absorption is something which is invisible. You may not see it in someone so easily. You may see symptoms, but not the absorption itself and what he feels during the time of absorption, what he realizes during this time. So the roots are the most important part of the tree of life. The spiritual practice nourishes all the other aspects, and whatever other aspects are there, they should serve you in your progressive journey back home, back to Godhead. Chaitanya Charan, I cannot hear a single word.
Can you hear me now?
Now, just now I can hear you. But before, I could not hear a single word. It seems almost that Krishna is telling us, your time is up. But we need to see now how to make this a good conclusion.
Yes, Maharaj.
And then maybe afterwards we can just talk some personal words, even without taking the data by using the videos. Sometimes when there is a weak connection, videos take a lot of data.
Yes, Maharaj. So I'll try to summarize and then we can discuss. So today we discuss broadly on the topic of the role and with the metaphor of the tree, which is based open for and of the various aspects of life. Your foundation is like the root, physical emotion is the, and our social contribution is like the crown. discuss because we need to work on both interest, and that is what our acharyas have taught. You mentioned about the yukta vayagya principle, higher enunciation. That was because they had the adhikar. It's not that they were, say, were deliberately tormenting the body or rejecting the body. Rather, they were doing whatever was required for their body, for their service to Krishna. So we have to find out when, what way of interacting with our body and mind can help us focus on our overall growth in Krishna Bhakti, on our spiritual advancement. So then, the soul body example, the car body example. We are not the car, but we need the car. So we have to take due care of it. But we need to be aware of where am I going with the car. Otherwise, I may just drive for pleasure. And then that the need for physical care is well recognized. But we talk about the need for emotional care, that may not be a little bit recognized. Zeal of a new that where we impose our faith on others, and then we in term sustainable practice also. But actually, fanaticism is often a compensation for our weaknesses. So when we need to take care of our emotional well-being, I think you talked about that in two terms. One is that we need to have healthy relationships. We talk about Maslow's hierarchy of need, a sense of belonging. And also, we talk about acting according to our dharma. That will itself give us a certain level of satisfaction. A self. Purpose is it ultimately? It was that ultimate purpose that is to be fulfilled, that we develop our love for Krishna and attain Krishna by taking care of all the various levels. And when we discussed about that, if somebody has mental health problems, and chanting to solutions of the problems. So you mentioned that through your retreats and through your seminars, you found that devotees have found solutions to problems also, but we don't have to make it like this or that. We can have a balanced attitude and see what the ikar is, where made care. Ikar can be understood by taking guidance as well as from you mentioned in one sense, after we do Shravan, the Manan and Nididhyasan, those stages are like self-observation and self-application. So in that connection, actually a devotee is meant to become independently thoughtful. Student to do absence of is dependent on the spiritual master, but practically we are able to take and when somebody is being independently thoughtful, the primary focus is on how we can best serve. Understanding our own body and our own mind, our mood is ultimately up. And especially greater level of care. So, in thinking of this simply as self-care, we see it as compassion. We started with that. We take care of providing them that. So, in that sense, compassion, we take care of people. But also, if they have certain physical or emotional needs. Varnashram is essentially not just a social structure, but it's also individual alignment. And in that case, of individual alignment, we talked about three levels of dharma. All kinds of unhealthy habits and self-destructive behavior. So there's swadharma, and there's manushya dharma. That is how I contribute to society. Ultimately, it's bhagavad. So many things are not isolated in life. Many important things, but they're composites. Just like for physical health, it's now take size to be boost and oxygen. That's because of area level, and that may create some level of imbalance. So now, as devotees, if we learn to, if somebody gets too attached to a particular service, that may not be because of rebelliousness, but that may be because of immaturity, that they focus too much on book distribution or fundraising. So then as they grow, the balance will come. And to avoid getting imbalanced on the spiritual path also, we need to remember that there are external life or a record or book distributed or temples built or whatever, even our Bhagavad, but that's why be taken care of root. Maharaj, would you like to add anything concluding?
I'm very satisfied with your summary. It has shown me you have such a ability to structure things, to capture the essence. And I wish you and those who are listening to this podcast many, many years of insightful studies of this beautiful Krishna consciousness, which has so many wonderful jewels to offer. I'm very pleased. I enjoyed our discussion very much, and I have only my best wishes to you and all those who watch these and all the other episodes. Hare Krishna. Jai Srila Prabhupada.
Continue my small service. Thank you, Maharaj.